Welcome to whatever we're doing right now. This thing is April's idea. So, April, please tell us what the heck was going on here.
So, We Want More is an analysis podcast of Harry Potter and the Methods of Rationality. This is an analysis podcast of We Want More.
So this is an analysis podcast of an analysis podcast.
Yes.
Two levels of recursion. Let's see if someone can make it three.
That's the plan.
Okay, and this is not a joke as well, yes?
I'm not sure anymore.
Okay, we'll figure it out. I was almost thinking, as sort of a pun, I think that the name Metamore would be a good name for this thing.
That's a great name.
Awesome. All right, so we want to talk about the We Want More podcast, and I think we said that we were just going to talk about the latest episode, and if we decide to go back and do earlier ones, we're going to do that later, but we're just doing one this time, right?
Yes.
Cool.
The 14th episode it was.
Yes. Is it really up to the 14th?
It is.
Man, that went fast.
Just crazy.
Yeah, I guess when you do one every week, like some kind of person with a work ethic, damn. All right, did you want to kick us off with something?
I have detailed notes for, like, the first third of the episode, and then I've listened to the rest of it a few times, but I don't have too many notes on it, so.
I've got a few notes, too. Oh, and I think we should point out, this is not just an analysis podcast of an analysis podcast. This is also an analysis podcast of the stuff that people say in the Discord over at the Basing Conspiracy, where we first started up a We Want More Discord channel. Yes.
Perhaps also the Doofcast Discord at some point, although I'm not a patron currently, so...
I've been a patron for a long while, because you can patronize them for just $1 a month, and I was like, oh my god, I love these guys enough, it's totally worth a buck, but I've never joined their Discord just because there's only so many Discords I can follow.
Yeah. But maybe. And I don't want to explain to my parents what a methods of rationality is, so...
Do they have any idea at all?
No, I don't think so.
Okay. That could be a fun conversation. Maybe you could slowly suck them into the rational sphere.
Maybe once I'm not financially reliable on them.
Yeah. It's kind of nice. I've gotten my parents to, like, start seeing some of the advantages of it, but what I really want them to do is sign up for cryo, and it just doesn't look like that's going to happen.
That is definitely a goal that I have at some point, but I am not taking it on right now.
No, that's a tough road to hoe.
Yeah.
Alright, so start us off with one of your notes.
Okay, so I think this was early on in the episode. Brian remarks that Harry has been a bigger douche than normal.
Yes. When I heard that, my heart dropped because I love the chapter empathy so much.
Right.
That was the one where, like, Harry's, like, true depth of caring for all humanity really shined for the first time.
Right, because it's on to how he's being empathetic even to... Bellatrix Black.
Yeah. Like, even the worst person in the world, he wanted to help.
Right. So, and a lot of his arguments for this were, like, he talked about with Mr. Bester in the, what's it called? Ockelman's training. Obliviate is the other thing.
Yeah. Which they also talk about.
Is that also come up? I don't know. Well, no. They're obliviating Mr. Bester. Yeah. What's going on. And they sort of went into a conversation a while there about, like, Groundhog's Day loops and stuff. And at this point, Brian goes on a, like, multi-minute, speech about how Harry, like, I have some quotes highlighted, like, arrogant condescension just flows so easily from him.
Mm-hmm.
And, like, it came off to me, like, he did not make the connection that this is just how all humans would act, and yeah. that he thought that Harry was just thinking he was a brother. Like, and once Steven pointed this out, Brian did back down a bit.
Yeah.
In fact, he backed down a lot, basically immediately, I think.
The thing is, once it was pointed out to him, I think he backed down because he saw, oh, yeah, that's right, he's not really being a dick, and honestly, like, Harry would even think that about himself, not just think that, Harry would know that about himself. Harry knows that he's a human like anyone else with a brain that repeats like anyone else's does in the same circumstances. So,
right.
That's like the opposite of condensation in my opinion, but I don't know, the thing, it's been really interesting watching Brian going through these episodes because... in my book club, he always, I mean, he is a nerd. He's a straight up nerd. He played D&D, that stuff. But I understand now listening to him what like all the normal baseline humans, feel when they read Harry Potter. And it's, I have to thank him, if nothing else, for that, for allowing me to understand other people. Cause the thing is, he came into this chapter already really disliking Harry and thinking that he was an arrogant, condescending dick. And so, everything he sees is through that lens. Like, if there's someone that I know, what was it? Oh, on the Doofcast, they were just talking about the movie Doubt, where there's a priest who might be a pedophile, a child rapist person in that movie. And they mentioned how, like, what you think about the priest, because it's not certain, what you think about the priest colors every single scene that he's in. If you think that he is, everything he does looks so slimy and underhanded and evil. But if you think that he isn't, everything he does looks like an innocent man trying to defend himself from these accusations. And just like what you come in with your priors seems to make a huge difference. And this is allowed me to see, you know, start to consider why people have these priors about Harry, which I can get into after, right. But I'm sure you got something.
Right. I mean, Harry totally has done some fairly questionable things in this book, and if you don't fall in love with Harry immediately, then that might sort of color your perception of him.
Yeah.
Like it seems to have with Brian.
Mm-hmm.
It's just really interesting to see him, like, they color it to such an extent that he is reading things into the text that are so clearly not there that, like, even once it's pointed at out to him, he realizes that he was misreading it.
Yeah.
In this case, at least.
Yeah. I think, you're familiar with Bill Murray, right?
Not much.
I think the two things he's most well known for, I imagine, are Ghostbusters and The Groundhog Day.
Right, okay. I've seen Ghostbusters. I have not actually watched Groundhog Day. I intend to do it at some point.
Oh, it is fantastic. I think any rationalist would love it. well, the thing about Bill Murray is, or the thing about, in general, the lovable asshole character, Bill Murray is an asshole, and I absolutely hate him. I cannot watch Ghostbusters, as good as a movie it is, because he's in there, and I despise the character he plays. And he generally plays that character in all his movies, which is why I can't watch any movie with him, except Groundhog Day, because in that one he starts out as an asshole, but the entire movie is his redemption arc, which I really loved, because he stops being an asshole. But apparently a lot of people love Bill Murray. They just think he's funny and hilarious. And, like, there's this common trope of the lovable asshole. And if you think about it, like, Han Solo, that guy's another lovable asshole. Like, he's a dick, but he's, you know, he gets away with it because he's got this charisma, and because he's not really wrong, and I think that's the thing that separates people who love HPMOR from those who hate it, maybe. This is another one of my crazy theories, but I think that, like, we love Harry, or at least I love Harry, because he is smarter than other people, and he not only does he know it, but he doesn't suffer fools gladly. And I think that goes a lot to the experience of people who grew up, like, being smarter than most of their peers and, like, getting picked on and shamed for it. that we just took it because, you know, what can you do? And Harry, like, doesn't take it. He's like, fuck you, I'm smarter than you. And he's still a good person inside, but he doesn't, like, take the crap. And I think that's awesome. But I think a lot of people are of the opinion that this makes him a horrible person for not pretending that he's dumber than he is. Does that sound at all reasonable to you?
I mean, I think it's oversimplifying, like these things always are, but that definitely sounds about right to me.
Like, to me, he's an asshole, but he's a lovable asshole. He's not wrong, and he's really expressing all the things I wanted to, and that's why he's lovable to me, and I don't quite understand why he's not lovable to other people, but I'm trying.
Right. I mean, it's a thing, like, a lot of people can empathize with Harry, like a lot of people were always kind of questioning authority or whatever you want to call it, and were, I guess, like you said, smarter than their peers, and could not, like, a lot of cases you can't just not take it, and really, like, Harry does not trust the adults throughout the start of the book, because he's used to, you know, not taking everything going poorly, and sort of when he goes into the wizarding world, the adults start to take him seriously, and that's sort of unrealistic, I guess.
It's true, it is. But it allows him to finally interact with adults.
Right, right.
Really, I think Dumbledore is the only one that takes him seriously, because Dumbledore is just, I don't know, super wise, first of all. He's, like, the wisest person around, and also has access to prophecy. And the thing is, since Dumbledore takes him seriously, and everyone else considers Dumbledore to be such a, you know, huge figure, they follow his lead. So Harry got really lucky with the Dumbledore thing.
Well, I mean, was it luck, or did Dumbledore create Harry?
Well, okay, yeah. He did kind of hijack his life and guide him directly into this, yeah.
So, what's interesting to me is that Brian almost feels like he's, like, sort of in between the two extremes. Like, as much as a lot of people seem to think Brian hates the book, I heard him several times throughout this episode specifically point out things that he enjoyed, which I'm not sure if he did that as much previously, but I noticed it a lot this time because I was listening closer.
Yeah, and he's done it before too, a few times, so I recall him.
But there were at least, like, 4 or 5 different things throughout this episode that he specifically pointed out as being well-written or things he liked. So he's not, like, just... He doesn't take everything Harry does, like, completely seriously. He's critical of Harry more than I ever was. But he's still not the kind of person who's just dismissing the book as written by a asshole.
Yeah. I don't understand. I have a hard time understanding why he wants Harry to act like someone who's dumb and really gracious to everyone else for, I don't know, for what exactly? Like, yeah, Harry's smart and he doesn't put up with people's crap, but is that really that bad a thing? I don't know.
I don't know.
I see in the future, there's this scene where someone comes up to Harry and is, like, complaining about something that he did that they think, you know, Harry shouldn't have done. And Harry turns to them and holds his hand, like, what, 2 feet off the ground and says, you have to be at least this smart before you can talk to me, right? And I fucking loved that.
I remember thinking that was hilarious too, but that's, like, anyone who is not, like, already in love with Harry or does not already respect him is going to see that as just him being an awful person.
Oh yeah, Brian's gonna hate which, that.
I mean, to some extent, like, that's not wrong.
No, that's the thing. He's not wrong. The guy is being an idiot. Harry doesn't have time for this, and Harry just doesn't humor idiots. And I love that, and I would never have the courage to do that in real life, but he did, and that was fantastic. And sure, it's an asshole thing to do, but whatever. Sometimes you gotta be an asshole, and sometimes it's that whole lovable asshole thing that we like to see.
Mm-hmm.
And I get the feeling it's just going to be like, oh, that is so ugly. I think yeah. That really set me off when he said it was ugly for Harry to outsmart the bullies instead of beat them up. I was like, really? What the hell, man?
I don't think that was exactly what he was saying. Because... I don't know. Because... I don't think he's opposed to the concept of outsmarting people in general.
Mm-hmm.
I think, like, he thought that the way Harry did it specifically came off as arrogant. But if he had, like, tricked them in some way that didn't make Harry look like he was being full of himself, like, inviting them to... punch him in the face, or whatever it was,
mm-hmm.
is, like, it's sort of just Harry taunting them.
Yeah.
Which, I am totally down with taunting bullies,
yeah.
But I think Brian was reacting to that more so than just the fact that he was using his intelligence to do it, I guess.
Okay, so the taunting thing is what you think turned him off?
I mean, it was like taunt... He was, like... trying to make himself seem better and smarter than the bullies, rather than just trying to help us off.
Yeah, but how else was he going to get them to leave? I guess, I don't know. You're right.
I don't know exactly like what alternative I would have done were Brian in Harry's shoes or whatever.
Right.
But, like... I think what's going on there is more complicated than just Brian thinking that Harry should, like, not use his intellect.
Okay. That he was using his status as the boy who lived, a person with many allies, to intimidate them?
Something along those lines. But, there was definitely, the way Brian saw it, like, the using Harry's intelligence aspect was definitely something there. But I think I don't know exactly... what he was saying wasn't very clear.
Yeah. I think I just had my snowflake moment and got really triggered by that word, because I find that such a horrible word. But that's ugly. My own issue.
Yeah. Yeah. He uses it later again in the episode, too.
We're yep.
referring to the part where Neville is talking about Bellatrix Black.
What did he say about the Bellatrix Black incident?
He thought that Neville was...
Oh, yeah.
...talking about how, like, Lysoth had it way worse than him or something using... What is it? Like, cerebral, argument style that seemed more like Harry than, like, Neville.
Yeah.
Or something like that. And he called that, like, I guess, like, ugly, I don't know.
Yeah, that was interesting. First of all, he got that completely backwards.
Yeah, like, this is even more so, like, misreading than the Mr. Bester part.
Yeah. This was entirely, he was trying to tell Harry, don't rescue Bellatrix, she's the most evil person alive.
I'm not sure that was exactly what Neville was saying. I don't think Neville necessarily opposed at least the idea of getting her... Like, I don't think at the end of the story, when Harry plans to take down Azkaban somehow, that Neville would be opposed to this.
I kind of get the feeling that when she's broken out of Azkaban and he vows to, you know, never live, sleep, or breathe again until she's recaptured. Not exactly that, but, you know, he's forming up his own posse and basically going to get himself killed. I think he definitely thinks she should be back in Azkaban.
Right, I didn't remember that part. I think, I don't know. Maybe he does. I feel like he mostly is just opposed to her being free.
Yeah.
But maybe he does actually want her in Azkaban, I'm not sure.
It's probably the freedom thing, you're right.
But yeah, Brian read it as Neville being all compassionate or something.
Yeah.
And this, which I guess is somewhat more to Neville's character in canon, maybe? But so I guess that could have been another thing of him, like, relying more on his expectation of how Neville would act than on what the text is actually saying.
I found this another one of those really interesting places where, like, baseline people are different from, you know, me and whoever I identify with, because, like, at this point, he got into saying how, like, ethics should be more a matter of, like, a gut reaction instead of this cerebral thing that you're thinking out. And I believe these weren't his exact words, but it was something like, he wants someone to say, this would be a shitty thing to do, and I don't want to be a shitty person, so I'm not going to do it. And like, hearing that, I was like, I want nothing to do with normal baseline person ethics ever, if this is what they think. Because absolutely anyone can be like, well, you know, letting Jews run around free is a shitty thing to do, and I don't want to be a shitty person. It's like, ethics should never, ever be gut reactions. I mean, gut reactions obviously will inform them, because that's how we're wired, but they should have a foundation of having thought things through and being very cerebral and left-brained. And, like, someone advocating for the exact opposite of that kind of showed me how disconnected I have been from the wider humanity for a while now, that struck me as so strange and abnormal.
Right, right. I've had conversations with people that have been the same, where I'm, like, approaching ethics from a rationalist more standpoint, but it seems like most people don't.
Yeah.
But, like, I'm not getting the impression that they would, like, be not flipping the switch on the trolley problem or anything like that. It's just that they, like, haven't extrapolated that sort of thinking to everything else.
Yeah. So, I don't know if this is related exactly, but tangentially related, after that they went into the whole, Snape being bullied and then reacting badly to that and calling Lily a mudblood. And Brian said that this was that Harry's explanation that his mom was shallow because Snape was ugly and unpopular and his dad was rich and popular was very, I don't remember exactly what he said because that was one that I didn't have time to re-listen to that part. But something along the lines of that this was sort of an incel-y terrible thing to say, right?
The word incel definitely came up. I don't remember it, like, something along those lines, yeah.
Yeah. And that, I mean, since we know much more of the story, we can understand that, but, like, Harry just saw some kids being beat up, or just saw a poor kid who lost his parents being beat up, and he saved that kid, and when Snape asks him that question, he's directly relating it to what he just saw, you know? Why would someone side with these bullies that were going to throw him out the window just to watch him, you know, fall to the ground and then be writhing in pain or whatever down there? Obviously, that fall wouldn't kill a wizard. but who sides with the bullies after something like that, even if the bullied person does call his savior a mudblood? That's...
Right.
That's... I don't know. I, within reason, so, like, since this is supposed to be at least partly based on the Discord, within reason said that, like, is anyone under the assumption that high school girls attracted to good-looking popular boy not the most expected thing ever?
But right, then, I remember.
Yeah, but then why we Kerr like agreed with Brian 100%, and I'm not sure. How did you feel about this whole situation?
I mean, on the one hand, like, I don't think describing Harry as an incel makes much sense, because, like, Harry certainly was not arguing that Snape was entitled to Lily's affection in any sense. Just that, like, he should not have, incels are saying that, like, it's the women's, like, women are being, I guess, shallow for not wanting to date us who are perfectly fine, nice people. And Harry is, like, sort of saying the same thing, but his advice is for Snape to find someone else.
Yeah,
he's rather basically than saying that, like...
Yeah, he's saying, she's shallow, you dodged a bullet, move on.
Right. Whereas, like, the incel perspective is to just, like, rave on about how all women are shallow, the world is awful.
Yeah. Like, with Harry, I don't even think it was a sex thing. He was just saying, like, this particular person was shallow because of what they did, and it's not like women are shallow or anything. It was just, like, the facts of the matter seem to say that this was shallowness.
Mm-hmm. And, like, I assume that in the actual fact of the matter, Lily did not immediately go off and start dating the bullies, or the bully, but that, like, presumably some period of time passed.
Yeah.
And I don't think Harry necessarily realized that in the hypothetical.
It seems to be at least, yeah, that's true. It seems to be at least partially pattern matching, because Wywee Kerr, like, then said, I don't think shallowness in that sense is common enough to bring up in this fashion. I think usually when people say it, it's to blame the one you like for not liking you. Which, on the one hand, probably would be a thing Snape would do. He'd be, you know, blaming her, saying she's shallow, but it's not something Harry was doing. So it's more like the common pattern matching of when people say someone is shallow, it's because they're just trying to blame someone else.
Right.
For not liking them.
Because Harry isn't... I mean, he does say that, if anything, it is Lily's fault, but I don't think he's really trying to assign blame, necessarily.
Yeah. I do want to bring this up back to something, though. Within Reason, also on this whole topic, posted, what are people attracted to if not good looks and status? Which I think is kind of a fair point. Like, are we upset at someone for being attracted to an attractive person? It seems unfair to say that that's shallow. So what are we complaining about here?
I mean, I think that kind of... I mean, like, well, Within Reason says is, like, well, exactly what you just read. I feel like that is leaving stuff out, because personality is not irrelevant.
Yeah, personality is a large part of what makes someone attractive.
And now, although it's not part of good looks, it does contribute to status, but, like, if someone is high status but an asshole, you're still not necessarily going to want to date them.
Yeah, and we know from, you know, outside knowledge that actually Harry's dad has a great personality and Snape has a shit-ass awful personality. So in that case, she was not being shallow, but all we hear is that, like, there's this bully beating up a smaller kid, and that would make you think immediately, this person has a terrible personality, because what kind of terrible person does that? And
right.
So Harry was totally on the right track when he said that she's probably shallow, because who likes a bully that does that kind of thing?
Right, and
someone,
I mean,
who doesn't care about personality and just wants, you know, a pretty face and a rich bank account.
Yeah. Snape's retelling of the story left out all of that stuff about Snape being, like, It was not just that one instance.
Yeah.
Of him using the term mudblood.
Yeah.
And the bullying, like, presumably was not. I mean, we don't know exactly how it all went down.
I think that's part of what I wish. I know Brian can read more into this if he wants to, because I've seen him get super analytical on stuff, but this is like one of those things where if you really read and think about it and look into it, you get to, like, oh yeah, Snape was presenting him with this situation that is not what we know it to be, but based on what Harry had to go on, it was fine. And instead he, like, reacts to Harry called a woman shallow, I'm pattern matching to how this often plays out in the real world, which I think he can do better than that. And I don't know, maybe I'm just being oversensitive because I really like Harry.
That's certainly possible.
I do want to say, in Brian's defense, though, he's had some really cool points, too. Like when he pointed out that Snape can't protect Lysoth anymore because of how he's bound to not bully people, not bully the students. I thought,
right.
I don't know, like, exactly how true that was, because I think Stephen pointed out that they were of the age where he could still bully them, so I don't know if that's literally true, but that is such a good headcanon that I am now going to believe it. Like, that is one of those things that if I had written something and someone came up with that, I would be like, oh, that is not what I meant, but that is now the truth, and I wish I had written it.
Does it actually say what year the students doing the bullying are in?
I don't recall.
I don't remember actually reading that, and...
Yeah, that was a brilliant pickup on Brian's part.
Quickly control-F-ing through the text, I'm not seeing anything about their year.
He also had this...
Fifth year.
Fifth year.
What was Snape's instruction? It was fifth, sixth, seventh. It was fifth and above, right?
I think he was allowed to bully. Technically he could have, but maybe he was still being more constrained by Dumbledore's
thing. I mean, I feel like he was encouraged to be more... less
awful.
In general?
Mm-hmm. He also had this really cool idea about, before you're going to get obliviated voluntarily, having some kind of signed note to yourself that's, you know, authorized, what is it called? Notarized by someone that's saying, yes, you signed this in good faith and in sound mind, where you write a note to yourself saying, hey, I've agreed to be obliviated, nothing bad happened. Because that's one of those things that, like, when you go under general anesthesia, which is the closest thing to obliviation we got, you're basically helpless for a while, because for at least 15 minutes, you're going to be completely, not completely lucid, but you're still going to be functional, but you won't remember anything in those 15 minutes at all. Like, when he's saying, am I going to remember this? Okay, am I going to remember this? And we just, like, trust that there's doctors around, they're ethical, there's enough other people around that nothing bad's going to happen, but in the wizarding world, like, his idea to have a notarized, I'm okay with being obliviated, nothing bad happened, is kind of genius, and I wish that had been in the text too.
Yeah, that is a great idea.
That was my first, like, seeing Brian jumping on the munchkining through the implications of stuff, and I felt really proud. I was like, rock on, Brian, you're getting into the game.
I'm not sure I would quite describe that as munchkining, but it's definitely, like, reading into the implications of things, and, you know, doing the kind of world building that Yudkowsky has been throughout this entire book.
Yeah.
Of, like, what implications do the things that are in Rowling's text imply.
Yep. Boom, boom. Did you... Okay, I got another thing, but you go ahead. Do you have a thing?
Do I have a thing?
Mm-hmm.
I don't remember saying I had a thing.
Okay. So remember the part where we were asked, or you were asked specifically, because no one else knows that I'm going to be in this yet, where you were asked specifically to sing a song or a verse?
Oh, God. I do remember that. I don't remember what. I have no idea what the verse was.
So what happened was when I was saying the whole thing about, like, Brian finds it distasteful that Harry is outsmarting people, and he'd probably think it'd be really great if, like, Harry was bigger and beat them up. Which, just getting back to that real quick, the fact that if Harry was physically larger and more muscular, there's no way he could, like, hide that. Like, everyone would see and acknowledge. And so, like, that... I don't know why it's such a virtue to pretend that you're less smart and that, yeah, no, everyone's just smart in their own way, you know, whatever, when Harry's, like, just legit actually smarter than most people and even most adults. Whereas if Harry was 11 years old and legit bigger and stronger than even most people and most adults, like he had half giant or something, then nobody would be angry at him for... Or at least I get the feeling that Brian wouldn't be angry at him for not pretending, oh, you know, I'm just as weak as all you guys, you know?
Yeah, I feel like this pattern has been noticed a while, like, for a while. Like, I think there's a slight Star Codex post to a similar effect.
Yeah.
That people see being, like, intelligence as a sort of different kind of thing than... other skills where you can just be, like, intelligence, thinking of yourself as, like, super smart or whatever is looked down upon more so than, with other, I guess, skills or attributes.
You know, I'm kind of half willing to bet that, just on a whim, that it's because other animals are better than us in every single aspect of things. There's animals that are smarter, or not smarter, there's animals that are bigger and stronger and faster and have better senses. The only thing that we're better than all animals at is general intelligence. And so someone saying that, like, I have a higher level of general intelligence than you would almost maybe seem to other people like saying, I am more human than you are. You are closer to the animals. And, you know, I don't think that's what is meant by that ever, but it could be taken that way. And I think, and I'm not even, I take that back what I just said. Some people did mean it that way. There are some people that say, you know, my group is better and therefore you guys are more like animals. And those people are legit awful people.
I am willing to take you up on this bet. I do not think that is the primary reason for this.
No? What do you think it is?
I mean... I just, that seems like such a specific story about why this happens that, like, it's like a just so story. It doesn't.
It is, but like, I'm good at making those up, so I have fun with it.
It's certainly a fun story. I just don't think it's true.
Okay.
I think. Why specifically intelligence? I don't know.
Hmm. Maybe intelligence is easier to hide? So people feel like you should hide it?
I don't.
Because it's not fair. It is not fair that some people are bigger and stronger, or and some people are prettier. Like, all those things aren't fair, but you can't hide those. Or it's also not fair that some people are smarter, but that's at least something that you can hide so other people don't feel bad about it.
I mean, it's more that, like, I don't think you're expected to hide it. I don't think Harry is like, anyone expects Harry to try to... Well, I don't know, I mean, talking about your grades being, like, super high is sometimes seen as bragging. It's like bragging in general is looked down upon, but talking about your intelligence is more likely to be seen as bragging than just like being a large and strong person is. Like, you can't see just like being attractive as bragging, but talking about how attractive you are is.
Yeah. And, yeah,
like, everything that Harry is doing to show off his intelligence is talking about it or something similar. He's intentionally showing it off.
Okay.
So I guess it is sort of because you can hide it.
It'd be like someone just going around doing curls with massive amounts of weights.
Like, yeah, like, so something like that, yeah.
Okay.
Like, that would obviously be...
kind of douchey.
Yeah.
Okay. So, I'm sorry, I got off track, but the thing was that I basically posted that if, I think if Harry was really big, then it wouldn't have been, you know, as distasteful. And then Zalbo posted Harry Potter and the Muscles of Robustness. And Within Reason posted Harry Potter and the Brute Strength. Going back to that awesome story.
Oh, here it is. Oh, God. Okay.
Yeah, going back to that awesome story.
Is it just this one, Alexander? This one. Oh, no, this is several posts of...
Yeah, people just riffing in the Discord. And then Within Reason posted Voldemort, now played by The Rock. And then I posted Rational Gaston as villain for HP Moore Season 2 would be a thing I would love. And then there were like 4 or 5 different people posting modified that one verse from the Gaston song. And they were all a lot of fun. I absolutely want to thank absolutely everyone who participated in that because that was a great time.
Okay. So I have to sing this now?
You know, one of them.
No, I can't. I can't not sing the whole thing.
All 4 of
them? Yeah, all 4.
All right. I only pulled up the one that had been most upvoted, but yeah, go for it.
Oh, God. No one quests like Gaston or digests like Gaston. No one finds out the truth using tests like Gaston. If my priors show it's worth investigating, what a smart guy that Gaston.
Woo!
No one waits like Gaston or updates like Gaston. No one calibrates his base rates like Gaston. I'm especially good at base theorizing high priors for Gaston. When I was a lad, I read 4 comic books every morning to help me get smart. And now that I'm grown, I read 5 comic books, not to mention Voltaire and Descartes. No one explains like Gaston, takes right pains like Gaston, says exactly the thoughts on his brain like Gaston. I'm especially good at communicating. I get that guy, that Gaston.
Yeah. I think I like that one a lot, because that was a reference to Ask who said, Rational Gaston realizes his high charisma ability score is his greatest strength. He goes from holding an entire small town in his thrall to charismatic dictator of a small country.
I can't wait for my siblings to ask what the hell that was.
Can they hear you?
Yes, my sister has she encouraged me to sing it.
Awesome. Mad props to your sister. Okay, I wanted to bring up a few things that, like, from the Discord that kind of, like, really added to my enjoyment of the story and sort of did a blow-my-mind thing. Like, the Galaxy Brain React, at any rate. should I go through a few of those?
Sure, although one thing I want to point out is that we're talking about how you in the Discord earlier. I want to point out that Brian responded with,
he did.
I've been too busy this week to enumerate the 37 different ways I want to tell Inuyasha to kiss my entire ass, so I'll just leave this here as a / to do. Ask Inuyasha what shallow asshole he thinks is impersonating Brian on the podcast.
And, you know, that's fair. I was grumpy that day when I replied, and I do know Brian in real life. He's not a shallow asshole. I just, like I said, I got triggered, and this is helping me see other ways that people can be, but...
Okay.
Anyways, but I think he's in the wrong.
I agree that, like, he is...
But we don't want this to become shitting on Brian podcast or anything.
Of course not. I mean, Brian's insight is... In many ways, the entire point of We Want More.
Exactly. We want to see how the rest of the world interacts with this story as well.
Like, seeing Brian's perspective has been great, even if occasionally he says things that are like, that doesn't really make any sense. Mm-hmm. I think it happened more times this episode than it usually does. Usually he's pretty decent about it. Or at least, like, the interpretation sort of makes sense.
Yeah.
In this episode, they sometimes just didn't make any.
I really loved his interpretation at the end when Harry says, I should, and the answer is to hurry up and become God. And he goes, Harry obviously didn't mean that literally. And I was like, oh, he doesn't know. Because that is probably the most correct reading for someone who doesn't know about Harry and the whole rationalist transhumanist ethos to be like, obviously no one could mean that literally. But he totally does, and that's what's so heart-wrenching and inspiring and beautiful about it.
I mean, I think Harry, on some level, does realize that actually becoming God might not, perhaps not be an attainable goal.
Yeah. But he's working towards
but,
it.
But, like, he does, that is actually something that he wants to figure out how to do, if yeah. he can. Does the where, the T, what's it called? Comedy?
Yeah, comedy.
The idea that he has for using that to manipulate reality, was that earlier on in the story?
Yes, that was chapters, I don't know, 11, 12, around there?
Right, right. So, like, clearly, he thought that he might have a way to mm-hmm. become God. If mm-hmm. he, like, what was it, confounded himself.
And he's spoken a few times about, like, you know, when he was in the alley with McGonagall about how lightning failed to crack as he made this proclamation that he was going to take over the world. It's like, Brian, the signs are kind of there, but...
Yeah, but Harry, still... Harry has high aspirations, but, like, he does literally want to hurry up and become God, but he also... It's more like, hurry up and do as much as he can.
Yeah.
He is not, like... He doesn't... He wants to do it, but he realizes that there might be limits to what's actually possible, and he just wants to do as much as he can.
Yes.
Which, if it includes becoming God, he's absolutely going to do.
It sometimes seems like a necessary condition to do everything that needs to be done.
Well, I'd say that's always a necessary condition.
Yeah. I like the take that Harry's arc is going to be to learn that he has to not be quite so ambitious that he can't become God. And I'm like, that's the opposite of what's going to happen.
I mean, he doesn't actually become God.
No, he doesn't, but the lesson
although
learned
gets,
is that like
he
needs to be
close.
More careful. Yeah.
He the does less... gain become Dumbledore's heir, basically.
Yeah. And the lesson is, like, don't hurry up to become God. Become God slowly and safely. Because if you hurry up, you accidentally destroy the world in the process.
Yeah. That is, I mean, not the only moral of the story, but that is
yeah.
definitely something that Harry reflects on at the end.
Yep.
With the vow and all.
Yeah. All right, so one of the things that, from the Discord, that really jumped out at me, because this is also a Discord React podcast, is that LHC said, I don't think I ever thought deeply enough about this before for it to occur to me. Holy shit, you know, one of Harry's four parents is definitely shallow. I wonder how much that's impacted his gender worldview. And by one of his four parents, he meant Michael, the professor, who paid no attention at all to Petunia when she was ugly, but as soon as she became pretty, like, was like, oh, you're wonderful, and I'm going to marry you. And, huh. Like, that was...
Yeah.
That was a galaxy that, moment.
I think I reacted immediately to that by guessing Petunia because I misremembered the start of the story. Mm-hmm. Or, like, messed up the counterfactual reasoning in my head or something. But... Yeah, that's... a really interesting take, because Michael, in canon, he did not,
Or in this story.
No, in this story, because Petunia, she was dating, Vernon
mm-hmm.
in this story before she reverted to the beauty potion. So
that's right.
She might. It's entirely possible that she never actually interacted with Michael until after the potion had already occurred.
Okay, and then she had the confidence to dump Vernon.
So all we actually know for certain is that there are several shallow people which Petunia interacted with.
Yeah. Do you think? I don't know. Do you think? Because they obviously love each other throughout the story, Michael and Petunia.
Right.
But
yes.
To me, it never felt like he treated her like an equal. And I could be wrong, because they only have, like, a few interactions, but that's the way it seemed.
And that also seems to be how Harry thinks... he does not think that they act as equals when we see his thoughts at the start of the story.
Yeah.
Although I don't remember offhand exactly any quotes.
So it probably has impacted Harry somewhat.
Yeah, that the relationship between those two, even though it's not... there's stronger evidence, like, at the start of the story, just from watching their interaction than there is from this revelation.
Yeah. So going to the treating people as equals, remember when Harry and Hermione are walking down the hallway and Snape steps out in front of them? And, like, Harry steps in front of Hermione in a protective sort of way? I don't know. I didn't know how to feel about that when I first read it, because on the one hand, I guess that's, like, the stereotypically admirable thing to do. It's what all the heroes in Harry's books that he read would have done. And in general, it's supposedly a good thing because men tend to be physically stronger than women, but, like, it just... It's not something you would do to someone with someone that was your equal, right? You would, like, both step up together to face this threat.
Right. And, I mean, I don't think that gender is a thing that is really involved here.
Yeah.
But, like, throughout the rest of the story, there was definitely a character arc where Harry learns to try to let Hermione be more independent.
Yeah.
With everything, like, with the... Sphiel arc, and after she's revived.
There's definitely a lot of, like, meddling and treating her not quite as an equal that he does, and I think that could be in large part due to how he saw his parents interact as he was growing up.
That's possible, yeah.
I don't know. It just... That was one of those things I never really liked about Harry, but I did like that he was working on it.
Mm-hmm.
And as much as Brian says, like, this is a story about someone who doesn't get how humans are wired and how sometimes I disagree with them, I think this is one of those situations where he really could have said that but didn't, when Harry said, I don't remember the exact words, but it was something along the lines of, hey, can I, like, get back to you and think about the right words to say at this point so you won't be mad at me and say them then? And Hermione says no, and obviously no. That's
the specific quote is, can I just sort of go off and follow him and let you work out what I should say to make sure you're not all worried and offended?
Right.
It's not even he's going to come back later. He's just like, Hermione, you figure out what I should do.
Yeah. Which, no, that is so, like, when you say, wow, Harry, you don't know how humans work.
Yeah, absolutely.
That was a great scene.
Yeah, this is definitely an example of that.
I did have... this is another moment from the Discord where I kind of felt like Brian for a moment, where people were talking about, like, ComEd-T and how it's supposed to work and make things travel back through time and send signals back to make you thirsty, but then, like, it would also have to send signals to not drink Comet tea if definitely nothing funny is going to be happening. And within reason, posted that the most implausible part of the story is the Comet tea, because nobody does spit takes that often. But then later went on to say, you guys are really committed to never admitting any tiny flaws in the story. And, like, this was one of those... things were, I felt like the grumpy Brian of the situation. I was like, dudes, it's a freaking, you know, comedy bit. It's not supposed to be taken seriously. Like, who cares about the comedy? But, you know.
Yeah, I totally see how that makes you feel like Brian.
Yeah, yeah. But, you know, this is the thing where, I guess this is what we do, right? We, like, take all the little implications and try to figure out, is this something the author fucked up? Because this has huge implications.
I still feel like it's totally plausible that, like, actually, like, having, like, common tea is, like, the actual act of drinking it encourages the spit take. Even if it does not, like, I don't think if you took another drink, like, if you had, like, a sip of water when you felt the urge to drink a common tea, that would necessarily result in a spit take, even if it would still be, like, there'd still be a funny moment.
Yeah. Well, the thing that, upon second reading, which really stood out to me once I knew how common tea worked, was at one point Harry got the urge to drink common tea, but he restrained himself and didn't, and then Dumbledore did something and Harry choked on his own spit. Like he was gonna do a spit take right. no matter what, even with right. that comet tea in his mouth.
I mean, I don't know. Right, he was. So I guess that does imply that spit takes are.
I know I've spit taked at least a few times in my adult life. It's not super common. How about you?
I'm sure it's happened at least once, but I cannot remember any specific instance.
I just feel like
I guess the only explanation there is that the comedy has to also make spit takes more likely, like make you more susceptible to reacting in that way.
Yeah.
If not more susceptible to funny things happening.
Yeah.
Like would be required for the godhood plan.
There is crap, just lost my train of thought, sorry. I don't know. I think this a large part of the interpretation of the story is realizing that it's a slapstick comedy up until at least the Azkaban arc or so. Because up right, until that right. point, like absolutely ludicrous things happen, and sometimes people are like assholes just for comedic effect. And you know, I almost view it in my mind when I'm reading it as I'm watching an anime. Like people do face plants, you know. His mom has to leave the room to go laugh uproariously outside. That's not something anyone does in real life, but it's totally a thing that happens in anime, you know?
Right.
And I think that's part of the reason that, like, if you aren't reading it that way, you're not going to probably enjoy Harry as much as well.
Right. I mean, isn't Word of God, like, Yudkowsky said that if anyone wanted to make an anime out of this, get in touch?
Yeah.
I'm fairly certain he's actually said that at some point.
Yeah. I got this from the Discord. Three Amen says, Brian constantly points out that Harry learned to lose in the sense that he learned to submit, not that he learned to fail. When reading on my own, I basically thought that was the point of the lesson, and never would have considered that Quirrell might be trying to get Harry to accept high-level failure. Now, though, I'm starting to see some parallels. In the final chapters, Harry makes a point about how being not evil is sometimes to your direct benefit, and Voldemort should adjust his heuristics in favor of this. Voldemort takes the small lesson about the benefits of cooperation, but ignores the big one about the benefits of morality. What if learning to lose was the same thing? It was supposed to teach him a general skill he'd need to bow to Voldemort's power and accept defeat, but it just taught him the object skill of submitting until the right time came. Which I didn't realize the first time I was reading it that Quirrell was Voldemort. And in retrospect, right. he probably was trying to teach Harry learn to lose, because in the future, you're going to have to lose to me, and if you don't, I will kill you.
Right.
But the lesson Harry learned was the much better one and much worse for Voldemort, where it was learn to submit and pretend that you have lost, until the right time comes, and then you turn the tables and fuck up the person that was making you lose before.
Right. And submitting for Harry and not just trying to win, like with the scenario of the remember all.
Yeah.
Like that's clearly like I think that's the most well-defined example of what exact lesson Harry is learning here. He does not accept defeat at the unimportant thing of the challenge he's doing over the remember-all. But even though that is not actually a goal that's important to him.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So, reading that was like, oh my god, I love how that turned around and bit Voldemort in the ass when...
yeah.
I guess we are bumping up against our 1 hour, and we kind of wanted to stop after 1 hour. We got a couple more fast things, but do you have things you would like to talk about? Because
I've listened to the podcast a few times. I did read the Discord conversation as it was happening, but the idea for this podcast came up during the Discord conversation, so I obviously wasn't taking any notes prior to then.
Yeah,
and I didn't realize it was actually going to happen until you DM'd me later. So I don't have any notes from the Discord, and we've already covered everything I want to touch in the actual podcast.
Okay. Then I just got a couple quick things then. Within Reason, God, I'm quoting Within Reason a lot. I think I must think a lot.
Yeah. He said, like, a few things that I remember wanting to look into.
Yeah. But he said that I realized H.P. Moore manages to do what Ready Player One tries to do, which is stick a lot of in-group references into a fun action story without it getting annoying, which Ready Player One fails at. I didn't read Ready Player One because I am kind of allergic to nostalgia, but I think that the in-group references, I mean, I know that Ready Player One does a lot of them. I don't know if they were done well or not, but I love how H.P. Moore does them. They're just, flow right in seamlessly. And the thing is, with almost all of them, if you don't know the reference, it doesn't matter. The story still flows fine. But if you do know, you're like, oh, he's talking about Death Note right there.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I read Ready Player One when I was in, like, 7th grade or something, and I don't remember being particularly annoyed, but I was also a 7th grader, so...
Yeah.
And I also don't think the references were entirely integral to the story, so... It was kind of doing the same... Maybe it was because I didn't get so many of the references that wasn't annoying. Like, I noticed the really obvious ones, but it did not give off a taste of constantly trying to pander to me, because... I just saw most of the things as, like, some sort of vague reference to something, not something that I actually recognized.
Okay. All right, and the last thing I got was Three All Men saying, Brian has given me the odd experience of feeling like nerd is a genuinely insulting term for the first time in my life. I don't really have anything to say about that. I was just, like, thought that was an interesting comment.
Yeah.
I think Brian really has a sensitive spot about being disliked because of his nerditude, and that is one of the things that is endearing about him, but also, you know, I hope he feels better about that over time, because I personally think nerd is kind of a badge of honor, and and I don't like most of the baseline people that I'm forced to interact with for a long period of time. It's not true that I don't like them. It's just that, like, they weird me out, you know?
Yeah, like, I mean, like, with the people thinking that looking at ethics cerebrally is bad.
Yeah.
Like, stuff like that is just, like, weird.
Yeah, the baseline people are nice people. They're, oh god, I just heard how that sounded.
Oh my god.
You know what? I'm gonna walk that back entirely. I like a lot of humans. I just find some of them a bit weird to relate to them.
It's not like they're weird in general. It's like just a few specific things seem like just are entirely different from my perspective on them.
Exactly. And I'm sure they feel the same way about us.
Oh, absolutely.
Yeah. All right. Well, I don't know. You want to get back together in a few days and see if we want to do another one of these?
Yeah, sure. We can talk about... I mean, I'll pay more attention to everything with the next episode that comes out and see if we can be a bit more prepared for the next one or something.
Yeah. That is one of the things I hear from people who come to a book club for the first time. They always tell me afterwards, like, knowing that I'm going to talk about a book critically afterwards changes the way I read it. And for most of them, they think it changes it for the better, so...
Yeah. But, I mean, that definitely changed my experience of really listening to the podcast.
Yeah. All right, well, thank you for doing this, for coming up with this idea and putting all this together.
Yeah, it was legitimately just a joke at first, but this has been an enjoyable conversation, so maybe we'll do it again.
Yeah, I agree. All right, well, I'll talk to you some other time and see you on Discord.
See ya.